Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. In the last few weeks, we have been on a whirlwind world tour, going to Nepal and China. Today, we will continue with our peripatetic ways, making stops in Africa, Ireland, and Australia. We might even test the surf in Brazil. The first article comes from People magazine. It's a human interest story based out of Africa. The headline says, "Meet the man who invented an app that helps cure blindness in Africa." The title, "The Whole World Came into Focus" by Tiara Dunlap. Andrew Bastaris's entire life was transformed the day he put on his first pair of glasses at the age of 12. He said, "The whole world came into focus. I saw leaves for the first time. I'd never seen the stars, and I quickly went from the bottom of my class to doing very well," Bastaris, age 36, tells People. But Bastaris's feelings of joy soon transformed into guilt when he left his home in London to visit his parents' home country of Egypt. He says, "I became very aware that if I had been born somewhere else, something as simple as a pair of glasses would not have been available to me." Bastaris resolved to channel that guilt into something positive by working towards a career where he could help others access the same care that had transformed his life. He made good on this promise with the invention of Peak Vision, and that's P-E-E-K, Peak Vision. And I'll tell you right now, those initials stand for Portable Eye Exam Kit, Peak Vision. This takes the form of an app for a cell phone and a clip-on device. This will transform any smartphone into a mobile eye clinic. Of the estimated 285 million people who are visually impaired around the world, 90% live in low-income settings, while 80% of cases could be cured or prevented. These are figures according to the World Health Organization. Bastaris says about that, "The majority of people who are permanently visually impaired shouldn't be. We know how to fix it." The Leeds-trained ophthalmologist realized the need for a cheap and efficient way to identify poor vision while doing a research project in Kenya for his PhD. He says, "I set up 100 eye clinics, and most were in places where there were no roads, no electricity, and no water," he says. "And in the remote places, we'd get the biggest lines with hundreds of people waiting for us. I realized then I could set up clinics every day for the rest of my life, and I would barely scratch the surface of the problem." Instead of continuing to build clinics, Bastaris decided to bring the benefit of a clinic to schools and other healthcare facilities. The PEAK, this is the Portable Eye Exam Kit, the PEAK Examination Kit consists of an easy-to-use eye examination app and a 3D printed hardware adapter that clips onto a smartphone camera. This situation allows screeners to see inside the eye and detect cataracts, glaucoma, and other issues. Bastaris and his team have worked with education and health ministries to train a team of examiners who can do their work in schools, clinics, and can even travel door to door. Once an eye problem is detected, the patient or their guardian is notified of the problem via a text message, and their contact information and GPS data is stored. A quote, "We are able to track all patients who received treatment and those who haven't, so we can follow up," he explains. In its first trial, Peak Vision helped to screen 21,000 students in Kenya in 9 days. 21,000 in 9 days. Screening programs are now being organized for 300,000 more children in the same area of Kenya, with similar programs beginning in Botswana, Tanzania, and India. The PEAK team also works to make sure that there is funding in place to ensure that everyone who gets screened can be treated. A quote, "In a place like sub-Saharan Africa, the cost of eye surgery is between $30 to $50. It is very low," he says. Half the people in the world who are blind from cataracts, and we have known how to treat that for decades. There are millions of people who are minutes away from low-cost basic treatment that would completely change their lives, he said. Bastaris hopes this model can be implemented around the world, and thanks to a grant from the Rolex Awards for Enterprise, Bastaris has the funds necessary to build a center of excellence in Kitale, Kenya, where medical professionals can come together to learn how to implement the PEAK model. The article ends with a quote from him. The aim is to say that if you want to run a national program in Europe or in the U.S., come to remote Kenya to learn the best practice, he says. We need to change the thinking that Africa needs help. There is so much ingenuity and know-how and knowledge there that we can all learn from. That technology, PEAK, the portable eye exam kit, is explained at the website www.peakvision.org. So next, continuing along those same lines, I was interested in learning more about Andrew Bastaris. This is a transcript of a TED Talk that was given by Andrew Bastaris. He starts out by saying there are 39 million people in the world who are blind. 80% of them are living in low-income countries such as Kenya, and the absolute majority of them do not need to be blind. They are blind from diseases that are either completely curable or preventable. Knowing this, with my young family, he says, we moved to Kenya. We secured equipment, funds, vehicles. We trained a team. We set up 100 clinics throughout the Great Rift Valley to try and understand a single question. Why are people going blind and what can we do? The challenges were great. When we got to where we were going, we set up our high-tech equipment. Power was rarely available. We'd have to run our equipment from petrol-powered generators. And then something occurred to me. There has to be an easier way, because it's the patients who are the most in need of access to eye care who are the least likely to get it. More people in Kenya and sub-Saharan Africa have access to a mobile phone than they do to clean running water. Now, that statement that I just made is key to this whole program. I'll read it to you again. This is a fact. More people in Kenya and sub-Saharan Africa have access to a mobile phone than they do clean running water. The article continues, so we said, could we harness the power of mobile technology to deliver eye care in a new way? And so we developed PEAK, P-E-E-K, a smartphone system that enables community healthcare workers and empowers them to deliver eye care everywhere. We set about replacing traditional hospital equipment, which is bulky, expensive, and fragile, with smartphone apps and hardware that make it possible to test anyone in any language and of any age. We've got many trials going on in the community and in schools, and through the lessons that we've learned in the field, we have realized it's extremely important to share the data in non-medical jargon so that people understand what we are examining and what that means to them. We have even developed a sight simulation application. Once your vision has been measured, the app will show your caregivers or your teachers just what the visual world looks like for you, so they can empathize with you and help you. Once we've discovered somebody has low vision, the next big challenge is to work out why. And to be able to do that, we need to have access to the inside of the eye. Traditionally, this requires expensive equipment to examine an area called the retina. And you know, the retina is the single part of the eye that has huge amounts of information about the body and its health. We have developed 3D-printed, low-cost hardware that comes in at less than $5 to produce. This object can then be clipped onto a smartphone, and it makes it possible to get views of the back of the eye, and these are very high-quality pictures. And the beauty is, anybody can do it. In our trials on over 2,500 people, the smartphone with the add-on clip is comparable to a camera that is hugely more expensive and hugely more difficult to transport. When we first moved to Kenya, we went with $150,000 worth of equipment, a team of 15 people, and that was what was needed to deliver the healthcare. Now, all that's needed, I love this, all that's needed is a single person on a bike with a smartphone. And it costs just $500. The issue of power supply is overcome by harnessing the power of solar. Our healthcare workers travel on their bikes with a solar-powered backpack, which keeps the phone charged and backed up. Now we go to the patient rather than waiting for the patient never to come to us. We go to them in their homes, and we give them the most comprehensive, high-tech, accurate examination, which can be delivered by anyone with minimal training. We can then link global experts with people in the most rural, difficult-to-reach places that are beyond the end of the road, effectively putting those experts into their homes, allowing us to make diagnoses and to make plans for treatment. Project managers, hospital directors are able to search on our interface by any parameter they may be interested in. Here, where he lives in Nakuru in Kenya, we can search for people by whatever condition. Here are people who are blind from a curable condition, cataracts. Each, he shows a map at this point behind him, each red pin on the map shows somebody who is blind from a disease that is curable and treatable, and they are locatable. We can use bulk text messaging, again, to those cell phones that are ever present. We can use bulk text messaging services to explain that we're coming in to arrange a treatment. And what's more, we have learned that this is something that we haven't built just for the community, but with the community. These are little blue pins on the map. These represent elders or local leaders that are connected to those people, the red pins, who can ensure these blue pins then can ensure that we can find the red pins when we get there and arrange for treatment. The article ends by describing the patient like Mama Wangari. She has been blind for over 10 years and has never seen her grandchildren. For less than $40, we can restore her sight. This is something that has to happen. It is only in statistics that people go blind by the millions. The reality is that everyone goes blind on their own. But now, they just might be a text message away from help. And once again, this PEEK, Portable Eye Exam Kit, is from the website www.peakvision.org. So we're going to move on in our world tour today. By the way, this is the last program devoted to touring countries of the world. Now we're going to Ireland. The website that I got this information from is www.the42.ie, the42.ie. The article reads, "The next guy is all over the globe, and mostly Ireland." And yes, his story does include a bit on Antarctica. The headline reads, "The way I faced up to my blindness and paralysis was just replicating what I had learned through sport." The author says, "We caught up with two-time Commonwealth medalist, adventurer, and cure for paralysis activist Mark Pollock for this interview." This is posted on June of this year. The article starts with a quote, "I am standing there. My hips are forward, and the physical therapists were blocking my knees. He pushes the knees back, and I push my hips forward. With the electrical simulator turned on and me trying to straighten my legs, my hips went forward and my knees came back, and I'm in the standing position. Because I can't see it or feel it, I need that guy in front of me to say, 'I'm not holding, I'm not holding.' As unusual as it was for me, the guy holding my knees was really nervous that I was just going to collapse." The 10th of November, 2015, Mark Pollock remembers as clear as day the first time he stood unassisted since the accident, which left him paralyzed from the waist down. Many people may be aware of his story, but if you aren't, here's a quick run-through. Pollock has said before that the present is almost like his third life. The first life was his life before he lost his sight. The second life was after blindness and before paralysis, and the third life is now, dealing with both blindness and paralysis. Born in Belfast, in Ireland, he was a talented rower and sailor growing up, but always had problems with his sight. He said, "I wasn't allowed to pick up a contact sport, so sailing and rowing were originally what I did whenever I could see and walk. This is what he told The 42, which is the website. At the age of 22 and coming towards the end of his time in Trinity College in Dublin, over a period of 2 weeks, Pollock lost his sight. His vision started to go blurry and his left retina became detached. He went through various operations and procedures, but nothing could be done. In a matter of days, his world was turned upside down. When you acquire a disability, everything changes, he said. Everything. When I went blind, I didn't have a watch. When I opened my eyes, I didn't know if it was day or night. I couldn't tell what time it was. You can't leave the house on your own. Everything is new, from telling time to the way you find your clothes to put on in the morning to how you move about the house and then go outside. He continues, everything was different, and I spent those years after blindness trying to just rebuild my identity, which was to go and get a job, to study, and more particularly to get back to rowing. Getting back into rowing, it took 3 years to do that. It was the big change where I really felt like I was confident again, that I was competing again. It's probably the other way around. Through the competition was where I gathered my confidence again. He picked himself up, dusted himself off, and got on with his life. Pollock won silver and bronze rowing medals at the 2002 Commonwealth Games. He recalls how he kayaked across the Irish Sea, did the Round Ireland Yacht Race, and took part in the North Pole Marathon. In 2009, to mark the 10th anniversary of his blindness, he completed one of the biggest adventures possible. He became the first blind man to reach the South Pole. Remember, I said Antarctica would be involved. He was the first blind man to reach the South Pole. He said all of those were races, and they did have a competitive element to it, which is where I felt at home. Then came July of 2010, and his life took on another incredulous turn. Just weeks before his wedding, Pollock fell through a second-story window onto a patio and critically damaged his spinal cord. He was left paralyzed from the waist down and subsequently a wheelchair user. I am certainly getting a chance to learn how to deal with challenges, he laughs, his remarkable positivity shining through. I'm getting good at it now, it would seem. I go back to the days when I was 12 or 13 or 14, rowing on the Lagan River in Belfast, or sailing around club racing on the Belfast Lough in my boat, and you learn through sport how to win. You learn how to succeed, and you also learn what it feels like to fail and be beaten. You learn that neither success nor failure defines you for the rest of your life. You just go back to training, learn from it, and move on, whether it's a win or a loss. I think, in fact, the way I faced up to my blindness and ultimately faced up to my paralysis was just replicating what I had learned on the water as a rower and a sailor. Acknowledge that it's there, acknowledge that that's the challenge, and then decide what you're going to do about it. And that, in a nutshell, is what he has done. And here he finds himself in his third life. After his fall, his friend started a fundraising campaign and set up the Mark Pollock Trust. After a long and excruciatingly difficult 18 months in the hospital, Pollock himself weighing in on the initiative, he took the reins, and now the end goal is to find a cure for spinal cord injuries. He says it simply requires enough of the right people having the will to make it happen. It is our mission to find and connect those people worldwide to a fast-track cure for paralysis. Here's how. Science speaking and running events. For quite some time, work was being split between Ireland and the States. Pollock was overseeing most of the research, and it's been successful for him. He is now able to voluntarily move his legs with the aid of robotics and electrical stimulation. The next step is scalability. He says, it's been me creating the collaborations and doing the experiments into the unknown, the exploration around the cure. He continues, that has caused us to bring in the robotic legs and spend time in the States. But now we've got a scientist in Ireland. We've got the robotic legs here in Ireland. We've got the electrical stimulation here in Ireland. And we've created that collaboration with Dublin and a couple of companies. So now that we've got that in place, we want to scale that research up beyond what I've been doing, because I can now voluntarily move my legs as I walk on the robots. The aim is always to find good research, put collaborations together, and then get it out of the research stage to the clinic as soon as it can be done. The next step in that is to have a multiple subject study replicating what I've been doing. The way science works, one person isn't enough. Recent findings from research involving both paralyzed and able-bodied people in Trinity College have given the 41-year-old great hope in reaching his aim of walking again. Regardless of whether it was paralyzed people or able-bodied people, the lower the body fat, the better the electrical stimulation seems to work. The way I'm thinking about it now is I am an injured athlete. I used to do my rowing plus outdoor stuff, and all the other stuff I used to do, I'm paralyzed and trying to walk again. That's the new goal. In order to do that, I have to be electrically stimulated and I have to walk on robots. In the effort to concentrate on the paralyzed bits, I kind of undervalued the health of the upper part of my body and my diet. Scientists have said with the results they're finding, the lower the body fat, the better. So I'm hand biking 5 times a week. I'm working with someone in South Africa who I email my food diary to a couple times a week. It's based on the Real Meal Revolution, which is a high-fat, low-carb diet. He says, I've kind of got the 3 blocks, the diet and nutrition part to lower the body fat, cardiovascular part for the upper body to make sure that stays in good nick, and all of that feeds into the goal, walking again. It's electrical stimulation and robotics at the moment, but we'll add in other interventions as they appear. It's much easier to approach this like I would have approached any other race. Now that I'm injured, I should be even better with my nutrition. I should be even fitter than I was before, and all of that should feed into the ultimate goal of walking again. He cast his mind back to that day when he stood unassisted for the first time in over 5 years. He had been working hard in the hospital trying to move his legs and then moving into a standing position with the help of a physical therapist and the robotics. He said, I'd been doing that for years, but then we added the electrical stimulation, and instead of it being a mechanical thing, they turned on the stimulation. It's not muscles that are being stimulated, it's the spine that's being stimulated. In the history of spinal cord research, that is huge. They haven't been able to do that until the last 2 or 3 years anywhere around the world. It happens, and then you think, where can this get me to? Every time we get a little win like that, you think, well, this is an interesting start. Where can we get to? It was dramatic, and it was big to win, but it's very much at the start of this process. In terms of the present, between his own training and his work, there is plenty happening. Ending up with a quote, I'm going to the gym every day, turning up over months in what will turn out to be years, and drawing from everything I learned in sport. We wish him well. The next article comes from Australia. Vision-impaired triathlete changing lives by getting more blind people running. Speaking of getting fit, this article was written by Kathy McLeish, and it was posted by ABC News in August of this year. Running has been called the world's most accessible sport, but elite para-triathlete Casey Hyde says in reality, running is not open to everyone. Hyde runs, rides, and swims while tethered to a trained guide to keep her on track and was the first blind woman to complete the Ironman Western Australia. Her quest to get more vision-impaired people out in their running shoes has been changing lives. She said, if I can give them encouragement to show them how to walk, jog, and run, that's a new activity for them, she said. Exercise is great for depression and anxiety and stress. We get a lot of, your guide dog's not allowed, or you're not allowed. The no's are quite overwhelming when someone says, yes, you can do it. Here's a guide for you. That is a new friend you make, and the anxiety and stress just disappears. She helped kick off 2 new visually impaired running groups in Brisbane, part of Park Run, an organization that holds free timed runs every week for several million people in 15 countries around the world. Visually impaired runner Barbara Clark has been amazed with the difference a 5-kilometer walk makes. She said it finishes at around 8 a.m., and I think I've got the whole day ahead of me. What can I do with my day? She said. Before I came to Park Run program, I would stay in bed till 11 o'clock, then get up and think, the day's gone, so now I might as well sit down and watch TV and do nothing. But I've joined the gym now. I've got two gym buddies. She said when blind runners join the groups, it's a big step into the unknown. And a quote, every time you walk out your front door, you are walking into an unknown obstacle course. Casey Hyde said one of the biggest challenges is that many blind people have never seen anyone running. And if you haven't seen it, you can't do it. Mostly, I teach blind people how to run on a hill so they don't fall over. But if they run on a flat surface, they fall over, she said. It can be scary for the running guides, too. As part of their training, they run blindfolded. Guide Wendy Crompton said it was terrifying for her. It was a path I know like the back of my hand, and I could not run it, she said. I salute these visually impaired runners. I couldn't do it. Organizer Gareth Saunders said 170 people have signed up to help out as guides. He said we have way more guides than the visually impaired people, which is an incredible problem to have. The response has been great. Surprising, but incredible. Now, something for you to think about. This will be our quote for the day, too. This comes from Storypedia. Please note that this short segment is accompanied by some amazing surfing pictures. The headline says, Inspiring Story of Blind Brazilian Surfer Derek Rabello. Derek Rabello, age 23, born with glaucoma, grew up in Brazil's coastal city of Guarapari with a surf-mad father and two uncles who were professional surfers. According to him, he never considered his blindness as a barrier to the ocean. When he was 17 years old, his father gifted him a surfboard, and 5 years later, he became a professional surfer, traveling the world's most famous surf breaks. Rabello says he can hear sets approaching, and he can feel his position on a wave by the different sounds of water around him. Touching the wave, too, helps him to sense its dynamics. I imagine thoroughly what the sea is. This thing feels to me like energy and blessings and happiness, the best feeling in the world. His story is a straight message for all of us. You have to believe in yourself, go chase your dreams, and you can do it if you want. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.